Okay, I welcome all of you. So now it is the time for a short Dhamma sermon. So we'll first pay homage to the Buddha and then start. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Actually, we have taken Anapanasati Sutta. This is available in Majjhima Nikaya. In the third book, actually Majjhima Nikaya has three books. And in third book, this Anapanasati Sutta is available. As we discussed during last couple of sessions, so this Kamatahana, this meditation object, Buddha recommends for many. It is not that only for a particular group it is recommended, but for a vast majority of people, it is recommended. Therefore, even today, there are millions, thousands of people, meditators are actually practicing Anapanasati. It has many benefits. And we are going through this Anapanasati Sutta because it is giving a kind of a prescription how to develop Kayanupassana, Vedanupassana, Chittanupassana and Dhammanupassana using Anapanasati. This is a kind of a recipe that Buddha has given. Actually, there were various other way of practicing Anapanasati and certain monks have explained that. But Buddha, after listening to them, then Buddha says, I also have a kind of a better way of developing Anapanasati in order to cater all four Satipatthana. As you know, in Satipatthana Sutta, Anapanasati is just one section available in Kayanupassana. But in Anapanasati Sutta, it's quite different. Buddha coming up with a kind of a strategy, kind of a recipe, how to develop Kayanupassana using Anapanasati, how to develop Vedanupassana using Anapanasati, how to develop Chittanupassana using Anapanasati, how to develop Dhammanupassana using Anapanasati. Actually, this does not mean that while developing Dhammanupassana, we have to pay attention to Anapanasati. So we have to pay attention to the breath. It is not. But Anapanasati is like a lifeline available throughout. And whenever it is necessary, we can plunge into Anapanasati. We can get back to Anapanasati like a lifeline, like a survival kit. Because say, for example, when you are observing a certain pain, painful feeling, assume that due to its severity, probably your mind get disturbed. Your mind get become restless. On such occasion, you can simply go back to Anapanasati because it is available and you are quite familiar with it. And likewise, there are many benefits and probably Suranga can start to show the information that we have prepared. There's a little document we prepared explaining first four steps. First four steps are in Kayanupassana and next four steps in Chitta, Dhamma, Vedanupassana, next four steps for Chittanupassana and last four steps for Dhammanupassana. Actually, I am not going to go through the whole thing again because we again and again covered the first section, Kayanupassana section, Vedanupassana section and the Chittanupassana section, but I would like to briefly pay attention back in the Dhammanupassana section. That is what we actually covered during last week. In Dhammanupassana section, Buddha says that one can practice contemplation on impermanence. So, you have heard this word impermanence, anicca again and again. So, when we are seeing the impermanence, it does not mean we are trying to impose kind of an impermanence. But rather, we have to see whether it is available or whether it is visible or whether it is possible to understand. It is not that we are trying to condition the mind thinking, okay, Buddha has preached impermanence. So, it should be impermanent. It is not like that. Buddha simply has invited us to see. Actually, there's a quality of Dhamma mentioning Ehi Passiko. Ehi Passiko means come and see. So Dhamma is like inviting to us for a wise investigation. Come and see. So when we also try to see, when we also try to investigate, we also should be able to understand this impermanence. Now, Buddha understood the impermanence. And similarly, we also should understand the impermanence by our own experience. When we have a sort of a focused mind, focused attention, well-concentrated mind, we are focusing that mind to a particular phenomena. It could be a bodily phenomena when we are practicing Kaya Anupassana. It could be a feeling when we are in the section of Vedana Anupassana. And it could be a mental factor, sort of a mental thought when we are in the Chitta Anupassana section. In each case, we would be able to recognize this impermanence, how transient each phenomena. That's why in Dhamma Anupassana section, when we are practicing Anicca Anupassi, that indicates we can apply this view of anicca, this view of impermanence towards the body. At that time, actually, we are applying this theory or we are applying this method to Kaya Anupassana section. So I tried to indicate that in the diagram where probably Suranga can show the diagram. So in this diagram, you can see there's a little... this thin arrow is indicated. In this thin arrow, I am trying to show that the Dhamma Anupassana section can be applied totally to Kaya Anupassana as well. So whatever the bodily phenomena can be seen as impermanent. It also can be seen as a kind of a fading away. Now, it is better to see impermanence first rather than trying to see how it fades away. Actually, more and more we see how things are fading away, then it is quite easy to see, whenever we see how things are becoming impermanent, how transient they are, then naturally we are coming to the section of fading away. That is Viraga Anupassi. As you can see, Dhamma Anupassana section has four contemplations. Anicca Anupassi Asa Sissamiti Sikkhati, that is the contemplation, contemplating impermanence, that is the 13. And then number 14, Viraga Anupassi, that means seeing the fading away. And Nirodha Anupassi, seeing the passing away side. And plunge into sort of a cessation. And Patinissagga Anupassi, that is the 16th, that is where we are trying to simply relinquish whatever the phenomena arising, we are simply relinquishing that and plunge into the cessation. So in a way, this is a little deep for a newcomer, but don't worry. But there are some experienced yogis here, so they can understand what I am trying to tell here. So basically, four contemplations is applicable to the body. As I said, then it is Kaya Anupassana. These four contemplations are applicable to the feelings. Then it is actually towards the Vedana Anupassana. And then these four contemplations can be applicable to the mind. Then it is actually Chitta Anupassana. Actually, very clearly mentioned in Satipatthana Sutta for each section. During the Kaya Anupassana section, Buddha says, Samudaya Dhamma Anupassiva Kayasmin Viharati. Vaya Dhamma Anupassiva Kayasmin Viharati. Samudaya Vaya Dhamma Anupassiva Kayasmin Viharati. That means, by seeing the arising, one can observe that phenomena. By seeing the passing away, one can observe that phenomena. And seeing the arising and passing away, one can continue his practice. So, this is available for the body. And not in only that, even in the Vedana Anupassana section, Buddha says, Samudaya Dhamma Anupassiva Vedanasu Viharati. Vaya Dhamma Anupassiva Vedanasu Viharati. Samudaya Vaya Dhamma Anupassiva Vedanasu Viharati. So whatever is the feeling, it may be a pleasurable feeling, it may be a painful feeling, it may be a neutral feeling, one can see how transient they are, how they are arising and then passes away. So at that time, it is in the Vedananupassana section. Now, when it is applicable to the mind, so there are various different kinds of thoughts coming. It may be wholesome thoughts, it may be unwholesome thoughts. Assume there's an angry thought coming, kind of a resistance available, kind of a resentment available. So that also coming and going. There's a loving kindness thought arise, that also coming and going. There's a lustful thought arise, that also coming and going. There's a renunciating thought arise, just to give up, just to relinquish, that is also coming and going. So all these are actually, we are looking at in a different perspective, rather than trying to promote wholesomeness, or rather trying to suppress unwholesome thoughts, we look at them in a non-judgmental way. This is quite important when it comes to Chittanupassana. So we have an attitude of non-judgmental awareness. So we don't have any kind of a preference, okay? Only the wholesome thoughts should arise. There is no such preference. There should never arise unwholesome thought. There is no such wish. So our mind is quite open. So therefore mind becomes quite relaxed, open, and therefore various thoughts can arise. We are not disturbed because we have some confidence now. Whenever one reaches Chittanupassana section, one has fair amount of confidence about one's mindfulness. So one know that my mindfulness is fairly strong now. I may not get caught to various defilements when I am trying to see them, when I am trying to be mindful about them. But rather one is confident that I can handle it. When there's a lustful thought arising, I can simply observe it. Not getting caught to lust, not promoting lust. When there's an angry thought arising, I can simply observe it. I can be mindful about it without promoting it, without fertilizing it, without encouraging it. So likewise, so one has some amount of confidence. This is quite important. So when you are practicing Kayanupassana as a beginner, you may not have that confidence because you are still catching up. You are still developing, building up. But when you reach Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana, it requires fair amount of established mindfulness, developed mindfulness, as well as clear comprehension, sampajanya. So if one has that, then one can deal with this section. So next, in this diagram, I am trying to show that Anapanasati, therefore, contributes to Kayanupassana, contributes to Vedananupassana, contributes to Chittanupassana, and contributes to Dhammanupassana. So this is what in this pink color arrows are showing. Just to give you an idea that Anapanasati can be used to develop all four Satipatthanas. And today we can see how Kayanupassana then contributes to the development of seven enlightenment factors. So this sutta does not stop here, but rather it is now further continuing. Now Buddha is telling how one can develop enlightenment factors by fulfilling four types of Satipatthana. You know, now Anapanasati is where we started, especially during the Kayanupassana section. And then it helped to develop the rest of the Anupassana. And now Buddha is explaining us how each and every Anupassana, that means Kayanupassana, Vedananupassana, Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana, is contributing towards the enlightenment factors, contributing towards the development of various enlightenment factors. Now, enlightenment factors typically we call as bojjhanga, bodhi anga means in Pali, the factors contributing towards the enlightenment. So therefore they are not immediately available, but as we practice, they start to appear. They start to slowly, slowly growing up. Now, the first enlightenment factor is mindfulness, sati. Second enlightenment factor is dhamma vichaya, investigation, vice investigation. Third enlightenment factor is virya, effort. Fourth enlightenment factor is rapture, piti. Fifth enlightenment factor is tranquility, pasaddhi. Sixth enlightenment factor is concentration, samadhi. And the seventh, the last enlightenment factor is equanimity, upekkha. So probably you might have already heard about these seven. If this is the first time, you can understand there are seven enlightenment factors Buddha preached, and they are sati, dhamma vichaya, viriya, piti, pasaddhi, samadhi, upekkha. And in this Anapanasati Sutta, Buddha very clearly mentions how Kayanupassana helps to develop each and every enlightenment factor. So therefore, this sutta is quite beautiful, quite interesting, quite important for a practitioner, because we are practicing in order to develop certain mental qualities, certain mental abilities, skills. So now this sutta is revealing how it is contributing. Say for example, when you are practicing Anapanasati, suppose now you are able to observe an in-breath. Now you are able to observe an out-breath. Again an in-breath, again an out-breath. Now this is just the beginning. We can say it's a bare attention. We can say it is not yet contributing much to the enlightenment factors, because still we don't have a kind of a unwavering, unremitting kind of mindfulness. But rather still our mind drifts to the past, may again drift to the future. So we are still in a kind of a struggle because the mindfulness is not yet developed. But assume there's a time that your mind is fairly now established on the breath. It is not drifting now. Now it is, you don't need to do much. Rather, mind willingly staying with the breath, very comfortable. You don't need to struggle bringing it back again and again. Rather, mind willingly, very comfortably, again and again, is observing the breath. In breath, out breath. In breath, out breath. It is like now like an automated. Now mind is doing the task for yourself. You don't need to put your hand. You don't need to interfere. The mind is very comfortably doing the task. Now we can say, okay, now the mindfulness has established. Now this is the beginning of sati, mindfulness, enlightenment factor. So you know, mindfulness is an evolving factor. It is not something, a fixed factor. It is evolving. We started with the bare attention. That may be the kind of the kindergarten of mindfulness, we can say. But as we move forward, it is now coming towards the Kayanupassana level, Vedanupassana level, Chittanupassana level, Dhammanupassana level. Now this is a kind of a multiplying of mindfulness. Now it is coming up with various phases. It's diversifying now. And then it is moving forward towards the faculty level. Now it is, now you can recognize, okay, now at this time I have very good mindfulness. At another time I have weak mindfulness. So now you can recognize it as a separate quality in your mind. Previously we don't know what is mindfulness. We don't know what are the qualities, how it looks like, how it feels like. But as we develop mindfulness, we start to feel it. We start to taste it. The taste of mindfulness can be felt. You know what is mindfulness. Okay, at this particular time, the mind is very sharp, very mindful, and you can feel it. So this is how it is evolving. Mindfulness is evolving. It's not a fixed factor. Now, in the seven enlightenment factors, in the first enlightenment factor, mindfulness, is therefore beginning, we can say, at the Kayanupassana section, where the mindfulness is well established now. It is not wavering. It is not shifting. Attention is well fixed properly plunge into the object. Each and every breath is now quietly observing. Now this is the beginning of mindfulness enlightenment factor. It does not stop there. It is now improving again and again. Each and every breath contributing a little bit of mindfulness. When we are being aware of each and every breath, it is contributing a little bit of mindfulness, contributing some factor to the mindfulness. It's like you are sharpening a blade, you are sharpening a knife. Now you are, each time when you are rubbing it on a, say, sharpening a stone, each time it is sharpening it a very little. Again you rub it. Again it's sharpening a very little. Again you rub it. Again it is sharpening a very little. When you do it 100 times, 200 times, 300 times, now you can get a very sharp blade, very sharp edge of knife. So similarly, we are using this repetitive action to sharpen mindfulness. At the beginning, we have kind of a blunt type of mindfulness. It's very unstable, but more we practice, is contributing more and more, and ultimately it becomes very sharp mindfulness. So this is how the mindfulness factor getting developed in Kayanupassana. Say for example, when an in-breath happens, you know it is okay, now this is the beginning of in-breath, this is the middle of the in-breath, this is the end of the in-breath. But this is where you are recognizing, because you have a kind of an eye to watch. You have a kind of a searching attitude. And now investigating, is it really the beginning? Is it really the middle? Is it really the end? Is it the gap? So you have a kind of an inquiring attitude. Now this is where the Dhamma Vichaya, investigative factor, going to develop. That is the second enlightenment factor. So you see, so these mindfulness and enlightenment, the Dhamma Vichaya actually is developing in a very quiet mind. It is not that you are trying to talk, you are trying to verbalize, you are trying to condition. Rather, you have an observing mind, inquiring mind, kind of a little curious mind. You want to search, you want to investigate, like a scientist, you want to investigate the breath. How it is happening? Is it long? Is it short? Is it the beginning? Is it the middle? Is it the end? Is it the gap? So you are searching, you are investigating, you are carefully observing. Now this is where the Dhamma Vichaya or investigation factor going to happen. Now this is a beginning, and more you do it again and again, 1001 times. Then this enlightenment factor starts to grow using Kayanupassana. Suppose if you don't have enough energy, you can't do it. You may do it for a couple of seconds, for a couple of breaths, and you feel lazy, you feel lethargic, and you give it up. But in order to continue this for, say, 30 minutes, in order to continue this for 45 minutes, in order to continue this for 1 hour, you need a fair amount of energy. You need a fair amount of effort, because this is not that interesting at the beginning. You know, it's very kind of a lazy task. Some of you may fall asleep when you are observing breath, because we are used to kind of a agitation in our minds. But observing breath is quite a soothing type of a action, kind of a very neutral observation. So it is not stimulating the mind. So therefore we feel drowsy, we feel boring, we feel bored, and ultimately we might fall asleep. But if we have effort, if we have energy, we may continue. We may continue without falling asleep, without becoming drowsy. So we are carefully observing each and every breath. Whether it is long, whether it is short, whether it is the beginning, this is the middle, whether it's the end. So likewise, we need fair amount of energy to continue like this. As I said, you don't need any energy to watch a movie. Do you need any energy to watch a movie? You don't need, because it catches you. It actually draw your attention to it. But breath is not like that. Breath may never draw your attention to it. But we have to observe it very carefully, since it's a very neutral, ordinary activity. So we have to effortfully do it. Now this is how the effort going to develop. So more we do it, the effort, that is the third enlightenment factor, virya, going to start. So we are not giving up. We are again and again continuing. We are again and again investigating, again and again observing very curiously or carefully. And as a result, the effort also growing. Assume now this whole thing becomes successful. At the beginning, it was not. You are struggling. Your mind goes to the past, go to the future. So likewise, many issues were there. Your body aches, and even for a slight sound, you get disturbed. Even for a little pain, you get disturbed. For various thoughts, you get disturbed. You get distracted. But because of your continuous practice, if you succeed, now each and every breath, effortlessly in a way, not much effort is needed. You don't need to struggle taking or bringing back the mind again and again to the object. Now the mind is comfortably observing each and every breath. And breath is also now slowly, slowly calming down. Now it is like a beautiful breath. There are no defilements in the mind. No kamachanda, no vyapada, no ill will, no lust, no restlessness. So mind is coming kind of a satisfied, rapturous, happy kind of a state. So this is the beginning of piti, enlightenment factor, the rupture. Because you understand now the process ultimately succeeded. You won the battle ultimately. It was a kind of a battle at the beginning, because the mind is like a monkey. It is not a tamed monkey, but a kind of an untamed monkey. The jumping here and there. It's kind of a waste of time at the beginning. But you are also not giving up. You are continuing your practice. You have a lot of determination. As a result of your continuous practice, if you succeeded, then this rupture going to arise. And the mind experience kind of an ongoing type of a happiness, kind of a pleasurable feeling is now arising, because the mind doesn't need to struggle. Mind is free from defilements now. Mind is free from five hindrances. So therefore, kind of a piti arise. So when piti is there, whenever piti is available, so it is helping actually to arouse passaddi, what is called tranquility. This tranquility is actually have two components. The body become tranquil and mind also become tranquil. So when body become tranquil, so you feel like floating, there are no pains available in the body. You feel quite comfortable, feeling at ease. So all these are kind of a bodily comfort. Body becomes quiet, completely tranquil. And the mind also now tranquil, it's calm, and therefore this is the beginning of passaddi sambojjhanga, tranquility sambojjhanga, that is the number 5. Then suppose when everything is happening smoothly, now your mind is quite tranquil, and the body also tranquil, feeling quite comfortable, and as a result, mind get concentrated. Passaddha khayasa sukhino chittang samadhiyati. Buddha says, when the mind and the body is tranquil, you feel comforted, you feel comfort, you feel at ease. So this happy feeling, this comfortable feelings contributes to the development of concentration. Because the mind doesn't need to go out now. Now, when we are practicing at the beginning stages, why our mind is constantly going out? Have you ever thought about it? I mean, you are trying to keep your attention on the breath, but why the hell this mind is going out? Have you ever thought like that? So, because the mind thinks, it assumes or it presumes happiness is available outside, not available inside. So just watching the breath is kind of a boring task. There is no happiness at all. So it is trying to find out happiness outside. It's always going to the past, always thinking about the past, imagining about the future, trying to find out happiness outside. But at this stage, mind becomes concentrated because it has found some happiness within. Internally now the mind is happy. You are not expecting anything from outside. You are not asking anything from outside. Internally, just by watching the breath, mind is now contented. It doesn't expect anything from outside. The mind is quite contented, quite happy. So it is concentrated. So it is contributing to more focused, more collected type of mind. Now we are in a kind of a success story. Now, I'll give you a simple simile. Suppose you are riding a horse cart. There are, say, 4 horses in your cart. And all the 4 horses are driving in the equal speed. And they are also very tamed. And everything happens smoothly. What are you going to do now? Suranga, can you answer?
You don't have to do anything, Bhante. You can relax and then let it go.
Exactly. So that is where we simply have to watch. We have to do nothing because everything happens smoothly. Now, the same situation in our meditation. Now, our effort has succeeded. All the struggles are all succeeded. Now, we don't need to struggle further. Now, each and every breath, each and every, say, whatever the phenomena arising, bodily phenomena, comfortably mind is watching. You don't need to drive it. You don't need to interfere it. You don't need to encourage it. But mind is quite happily doing the task. And mind is not shifting to the past or to the future. It's utterly the present. So you have to do nothing. Just watch. Let the mind take over. Now this is where the upekkha, equanimity, going to arise. Because everything is all right. So you are like an outsider. Now you are watching with an equanimous mind. So this is where the equanimity, upekkha sambojjanga, arising. More and more you do it like that, the equanimity arising. Now, this whole incident, all these 7 enlightenment factors are sort of sharpening each and every breath, we can say. And sharpening each and every bodily, say, what we call this element characteristic. Say, when you feel, suppose you are doing walking meditation. When you do walking meditation, actually it is a bodily task at the beginning. So your, say, left leg is touching the ground. You feel kind of a gross hardness, roughness you are feeling. In the walking meditation, there's a kind of a stage where everything happens quite smoothly. You don't need to put your hand. Your attention is not drawn outside. But the body is simply, the task happens by itself. Quite comfortable. You, like an outsider, you can watch the process. So on such occasion, you can say all these enlightenment factors are developing. Because the mindfulness is well established. Each and every time when you are recognizing hardness, when you are recognizing stiffness, when you are recognizing, say, lightness, heaviness, cold, heat, all these different element characteristics. So more you recognize it, so then the Dhamma Vichaya is contributed. Because you are, in order to recognize this in a distinct manner, very precisely, you have to have some kind of a searching attitude. You are kind of inquiring attitude, investigative attitude. Now it is contributing to Dhamma Vichaya. And when it is, in order to do that, you need a lot of effort. Because it's a kind of a boring task in a way. And you are contributing again and again, you are continuing. So the energy, the effort is developing. And when it is, when everything succeeds, then the kind of rupture, everything's smooth, nothing much to do, the rupture is there, happiness is there. So when happiness is there, the body is calm, mind is calm, asaddhi is there, tranquility is there. When tranquility is available, the mind is concentrated. You don't need to do anything, but mind gets naturally concentrated, naturally collected, for well focused to the task, well geared to the task. And at that time, you can simply observe it happening, everything smoothly, and therefore the equanimity arises. So likewise, whatever the bodily, body-related meditation technique, it may be anapanasati, body-related part, kanapasana section of anapanasati, or it may be dhatumanasikara, element meditation, or it may be, say, walking meditation. So there are many different kayanupassana related techniques available, and each contributing likewise, I have explained, towards these seven enlightenment factors. So with that, actually, I like to conclude today's short Dhamma sermon. Maybe we can investigate, or we can discuss how Vedana Anupassana is contributing towards the development of seven enlightenment factors on next week. So I invite Chatu or Suranga or whoever ready for the questions to present. So we can start the question and answer session.
Avasarai Bhante, we have five questions currently.
Yeah.
Question number one, this is a general question. Dear Venerable, things are going well in my life, yet I tend to get annoyed at things very easily. A few years ago, I had difficult times in my life, and I noticed I had so much patience when dealing with these things. I feel now, often my ego comes out, and I'm waiting for someone to do something that I feel is impacting my image. It's hard to make the right judgment at times. Sometimes I feel, should I let things go by and not pay much attention? Or should I be okay with everything that happens? In the working environment, I find people try to be highlighted by doing less work. This tends to make me annoyed, even though I don't show it. Inside me, I have an agitation towards these people. Any advice is much appreciated with metta. That's the end.
I think this is the quite natural way of world. I mean, there are, you know, if you know various processions, Perahara in Sri Lanka, so there are many elephants taken for the Perahara, but they can't use to drag logs. But there are elephants who can use for dragging logs. So therefore we can say there are different types of elephants are there. Some are used for dragging logs and some are used beautifully for beautification during the Perahara season. So likewise, during employees are also like that. Some are into marketing. They simply talk. They simply show. So some people are like that. They don't really perform. They don't do much hard work, but they know how to talk. But others, actually, there are others who do real hard job, but sometimes not get the praise or the promotion or the increment or whatever it is, but they are the real hard workers. This is the way of the world. I mean, it is not unique to you, but I have experienced this in my life, and I no doubt in all these gathering in this session, most of you have observed this. This is a kind of a common fact among people. Actually, we can't correct the others, but we have to correct ourselves. So how can we deal with this kind of situation? When I see someone is not really performing, but kind of pretend and trying to get something, kind of a bonus or whatever it is, and then how can I avoid making kind of a revenge or kind of an aversive thought towards that person? Because this is where we need to be mindful about our way of thinking. For different attitudes are available in ourselves, emotions are available in ourselves, and when we see someone is ill behaving, we get agitated. These are quite common. But the remedy is, the proper solution is to look at our mind, our own mind. When situations arise, how this agitation arises, how this mind get agitated, not his mind, but this mind, my own mind, how this mind get agitated. When someone is talking big, talking with lot loud words, then you might get agitated. Oh, this guy is talking nonsense. This guy is exaggerating. So you might get angry. You might get disturbed, agitated. So this, again, you can look back. Okay, the mind get agitated. Someone is maybe walking in a different fashion, and you might again get agitated. So we have some sort of a framework within ourselves, and when someone is behaving apart from that framework, we get agitated, we get upset. So we need to see this again and again within ourselves, and to correct ourselves. You can't correct the others, but we need to see how this mind get agitated, how the resentment kind of an arise, how kind of a resistance arise within, how this mind is trying to react, how this ill will going to arise. So all these different types of defilements can only be seen at various occasions when others are behaving like this. Otherwise, we think we never have that kind of thoughts. But when others are behaving in different manner, all these different kind of reactions are arising in our mind. So we have to observe it. We have to acknowledge it. Okay, this mind is kind of conditioned to operate like this. Suppose there is someone talking loudly. Then you might get agitated. Why he is talking loudly? Can't he talk silently in a soft voice? So you can think, but he is actually talking to his own friend maybe, but not to you. But you being the outside, you get agitated. So this is where our mind is actually reacting. So we can't go and explain and request every other to behave the way we like, but rather we have to prepare our mind not to get agitated by others' behavior. That's the most important thing. Otherwise, what happens is, every time someone else is behaving differently, we get agitated. So we can never be satisfied. We can never be happy, because every time others, because of others' behavior, we get upset. We get agitated. We get frustrated. So the problem is within ourselves. So I therefore invite you to come back to yourself, observe your mind, understand these certain traits in our mind. So the solution is within ourselves.
Bhante, we have a question directly from Udenika. I'll put her on unmute.
Yeah.
Hello, Bhante.
Yeah, keep on. Carry on.
I have a question. Sometimes when I look at things, like especially when I'm concentrating, I feel it's moving around. And then it happened today when I did the walking meditation. I was meditating for a while, and then when I look up, I felt like the whole area was moving. Is that a concern or?
Now, while walking, different perspectives can happen. Actually, your perception going to little change. Now, are you walking for a long period?
I did today around 45 minutes.
We have to little balance this. I mean, if we continue for a long period of time, we might lose the balance. So, do it slowly, slowly. In the sense, I'm not telling that walk slowly, but improve it gradually. Rather than trying to spend a long time, say you are doing for 20 minutes walking. Another next time you do it for 25 minutes. Next time you do it for 30 minutes. So likewise, slowly you are incrementing, slowly you are improving, so that you get used to this situation. And your mind get settled, your mind get familiarized with the situation. But if we do for many hours, I'm just exaggerating the situation just to explain. So if we do long hours, so again and again when we do, we might get a sort of overdose or kind of overflow.
Okay. But when I'm listening to Bana, then the whole, when I'm listening, watching some Bana on the phone or something, I can feel that the phone and everything is moving around.
How long are you practicing now?
I haven't been practicing sitting meditation for a while. I have been doing for nearly a month now. I'm doing mindfulness for 2 years.
2 years.
Like trying to keep concentration while I'm doing anything at home.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, are you practicing Anapanasati? You started with Anapanasati?
Just recently, like 2-3 months ago, I started Anapanasati.
What are the other meditation techniques you practiced before?
Nothing.
Okay. There's a little, I mean, if you have, I mean, how long have you introduced to walking meditation?
Here and there I've been doing it, but recently I've been starting to do it more often.
Right. So because, if our mind get too concentrated, too much concentration can lead to little problems. So therefore, we need to balance concentration with mindfulness. Because mindfulness is quite relaxed and it is kind of an awareness. And it is actually, is the one which is balancing. I mean, where concentration is required, we have to improve concentration. Where effort is required, we can improve effort. Where the observation is required, we can improve like that. So this balancing part is actually the task of mindfulness. So therefore, put in a very relaxed way, without too much concentration.
Okay.
Now, if you introduce too much effort, too much concentration, that becomes a kind of a restricting factor in your mind.
Okay.
I hope you understand what I am telling. Now you are like holding tightly. If you are holding tightly, then it is contributing negatively to the practice. Rather, if you allow things to happen, if you allow naturally things to grow, then it is a kind of a natural process. Therefore, it seems like maybe the concentration is too much, or maybe the effort is too much. Just try to adjust. I mean, say for example, in your practice, at the beginning, you probably have a little bit of more effort in order to tame the mind. But later, once the mind is well tamed, you don't need that much of effort. You can simply allow things to happen smoothly gradually, because now the mind is quite established in mindfulness. Now you can take your hand out, take your hand out, and let the process take over by itself. And at that time, it's kind of a relaxed attitude. So on such situation, we are actually changing effort throughout the session. At the beginning, we have some strong effort. Then it is we are reducing the effort because mind is slowly, slowly concentrating, slowly, slowly focusing its attention. And once everything is succeeded, we can simply take off our hand and let everything happen by itself, and we are quite equanimous.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yes, you are welcome.
Question number 2 of 6. This is on walking and sitting. Dear Bhante, I have been practicing as per your instructions, dividing my time between walking and sitting practice. My sitting practice is being mindful on the breath. I can feel the breath quite strongly, and it fades away after 10 to 15 minutes of continuous application of mindfulness on various sensations and changes in those sensations. I can continue with the sitting for 50 to 60 minutes without much distraction. My walking seems progressing well. I can feel the differences in the left and right soles. And once continued with the application of mindfulness, the sensations spread across the body and bleach away. After 15 to 20 minutes, I feel the vibrations of the feet touching the ground, but the mind stays calm and quiet in a suspended mode without identifying the sensations in detail. It is like I'm floating on a carpet of walking vibrations. Other sensations like sounds are around, but the mind is suspended in the middle. I can observe thoughts appearing and disappearing without harming this process. I tend to practice walking more than the usual session time, like this matter, which sometimes go past one hour and 30 minutes. Should I be concerned that the walking practice takes 1 hour, 30 minutes, and sitting is limited to 30 minutes these days? I recall Bhante always encourages to balance sitting time with walking and highlight the benefits of walking meditation. Is there an upper limit in walking where I should cut the excessive practice and focus back on sitting? Much merits for your valuable guidance with metta. That's the end.
Yeah, according to the information, I think it is quite all right to have this kind of a balance. Say you do 1.5 hour walking and then 1.5 hour sitting. It seems like everything happens smoothly. We don't need to do much change. As in the previous question, if you lose the balance, you get kind of a jerk. You get some sort of a situation. But here, things are happening smoothly. Now, what we need to really understand is that more and more we observe various phenomena, like hardness, stiffness, roughness, coldness, heat, movement, different phenomena are there. More we observe them, and it may be even vibrations, more we observe them, their taste become less and less. So you are losing the boundaries. At the beginning, you are actually able to distinctly recognize them. But later, as you have mentioned, everything become like a flow of vibration, a flux of vibration. Various phenomena are available, but mind is not that picky now. Mind is actually slowly, slowly finding its own independence while these various phenomena are available. And you are not picking any of these. You are not choosing different phenomena. But phenomena are available. You can observe them like a third person, like a different person, and you can continue. So mind is in a kind of a balance. So no harm, you can continue your practice slowly, slowly. So these different types of various phenomena become kind of a flux. Mind is not that interested about them. Mind has its own independence. It's going to find its own independence. It's going to find its own kind of an island, kind of its own refuge, not dealing with these various incoming, outgoing phenomena, not going through this arising and passing away phenomena. Because mind is now getting its own caliber, developing its own caliber to deal with this independent. So this is the process slowly building up. So you may continue. There is nothing to change.
Question number 3 of 6 is a general question. Dear Swaminwansa, I have heard that during mindful practice, when you bring back the distracted mind again and again to the meditation object and observe how it happens naturally, it challenges the strongly held self-view or sakyadipi. Also, when we observe the fleeting nature of the observations and after applying continuous mindfulness, it reduces the desire of sensual pleasure and clinging, kamachanda. Much merits if Swaminwansa can shed some light on the direct link between our mindfulness practice experiences and these higher goals of Buddhist spiritual liberation and attainment.
Aku, could you repeat the question, please?
I'll do it from the start. Dear Swaminwansa, I've heard that during mindful practice, when you bring back the distracted mind again and again to the meditation object, and observe how it happens naturally, it challenges the strongly held self-view or sakkayaditti. Also, when we observe the fleeting nature of the observations after applying continuous mindfulness, it reduces the desire of sensual pleasure and clinging, kamachanda. Much merits if Swaminwansa can shed some light on the direct link between our mindfulness practice experiences and these higher goals of Buddhist spiritual liberation and attainment with metta. That's the end.
Yeah, actually, we can't say no because there is a little contribution. As I said, even today's enlightenment factors, when we are discussing or explaining enlightenment factors, so when the mindfulness is well established, it's contributing towards the Dhamma Vichaya, the knowledge, the investigation, so the wisdom. So actually this Dhamma Vichaya, Sampajanya, clear comprehension, clearly knowing, is in a way the seed of wisdom. It is how it is, it's the beginning of development of your wisdom. Wisdom is what ultimately penetrate the sakkayaditti, the personality view. So therefore, we can't say it is not contributing to penetrate sakkayaditti. This is a contribution. It's a kind of a gradual contribution. As I said, typically we are with a kind of a compact view. So we think, okay, this body is mine. This is I. This body belongs to me. So likewise, we have a kind of a taking this whole body as one unit, one single unit. This is I. This is mine. This is I am. So likewise, using the body, we personify. We come up with the personality view. But more and more you observe the body, you will understand it's kind of a process. It's not a kind of a unit. It's not kind of a compact entity. It's a kind of a ongoing process, kind of a breathing process is there, blood circulation is there, various other digestion processes are there. So likewise, so many processes are there. None of these processes are actually fixed. They are also kind of changing processes. And they also depend on various other external factors, external causes, conditions. And more you observe like this, the reality going to be evident and you understand things as they truly are. So that actually contributes to further dilute this personality view, sakkayaditti. And ultimately, so it is not that we are simply observing breath, or we are not simply observing this, say, rising, falling, or simply observing hardness, roughness, all this. Slowly, slowly, this practice actually evolving to see how impermanent they are. It's a kind of a natural evolvement. We may start with very basic things, but as we move forward, our practice evolves. And we start to recognize different angles of the practice. At the beginning, various different elements are there, but now, element characteristics are there, but now, they all appear like a flux. They all appear like a transient, completely impermanent, coming and going, arising and passing away type of a process. So this is where it is contributing more towards the wisdom. And it is understanding kind of an impermanence and how and this kind of impermanent nature is constantly happening. Happening again and again. And it is kind of an ongoing process. This arising and passing away is a kind of an ongoing process. So we are being kind of tormented because of this kind of an arising and passing away. So is it really happy? Is it really pleasurable? Is it kind of a happiness? Or can we really expect happiness from this kind of a vulnerable situation? This kind of a transient situation? Impossible. Then we understand it is kind of a suffering, kind of an unsatisfactoriness. It is a sort of a torture. And on top of that, everything is beyond my control. Only very little control I have. So these are being governed by various external causes, and on those causes I have no control. So therefore, this whole thing happens due to cause and effect relationship. So nothing belongs to me. So I can't find a person there. There is no I there. There is no ongoing, everlasting, existing person, soul there. So now more and more sort of a contribution towards the wisdom happens. You are recognizing the non-self. So likewise, this whole meditation technique is allowing us to gradually open our eyes to understand the reality. So that actually helps to overcome, as you said, the sakkayaditti, the self-view.
Question 4 of 7, I think. Is a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, due to the current global pandemic situation, most of us live in fear at least from time to time, based on health, economy, jobs, education, etc., etc. When I try to be mindful on day-to-day activities, I can observe this fear as thoughts and physical reactions. The most prominent is the physical reactions in the body, which are the heavy chest, breathlessness, heat under ears, and tightness in the jaws. I cannot understand or observe from where these fears emerge and why they emerge due to external input. It will be quite helpful if Bhante can explain the basis of this fear and how should we manage them in the context of mindfulness. Thank you for conducting this valuable program and your insights. That's the end.
Yeah, I think this is kind of a common problem we face today, and this is the reality. I mean, we can't simply get rid of this. We can't simply suppress this. This is the bitter truth. So we expect some sort of a lasting happiness in a sort of a extremely vulnerable situation. So as I explained during the previous session, we are trying to find happiness at a wrong place. So, say for example, there's a beautiful story from Nasruddin. You might have heard the Nasruddin. So one day, he got a bag of chili and he's taking one chili and eating. And it's extremely, hot. And again, he's not satisfied. He's finding another chili and again eating. It's also quite hot. Now again, he takes another chili And again it's eating. He's eating. Still hot. Then a friend approached him and asked him, why are you eating this chili? I mean, it's all hot. And then he's telling, I am finding a kind of a tasty chili in this bag of chilies. Still, I couldn't find it. So we are like that. We think we may find one in the future. Still, I couldn't find one, but maybe in the future. So likewise, so we are trying to find out a tasty chili. So will you find it? So this is the problem. So this is where the, I mean, whole situation, all this world is depending on so many causes. And we have extremely less control over these causes. Actually, our governments are trying to give some satisfactory security, various other comforts, all the other facilities, just to show that everything is secured, everything is in well protected, you are in safe hands. This is how they market. But it's extremely vulnerable. Now you can see, now I saw this news, how this blast happened in the Lebanon. So all of a sudden, within half an hour, everything was blasted. They have never expected that. And in Sri Lanka, a long time ago, during the terrorist period, I mean, blasts happen, bomb blasts happen, all of a sudden. And again, say in 2004, the tsunami happened. I think within half an hour, 1.5 hour, 40,000, 50,000 people died. So this is the nature. So we need to understand how vulnerable this world is, how impermanent this world is, how transient this world is. This is the nature of the world. So rather than trying to find a permanent world, constantly happy world, trying to find out a lasting happiness in this transient world, we have to look at within our own situation and find happiness within. So this is the Buddha's what kind of the message. So the world is constantly transient. All the outside situation is very vulnerable. So expecting happiness outside is kind of a foolish task. So instead of finding happiness within is the better way. That is the most possible way. So this happiness is what he is recommending. So through Four Noble Truths, he is coming up with a solution for happiness. Through Satipatthana, he is telling, Buddha is predicting, if one is practicing Satipatthana, one may slowly get rid of Dukkha Domanasa. Dukkha Domanasanam Atthangamaya. So this is the kind of a promise Buddha is giving just before preaching Satipatthana. Ekaino ayam bhikkhave maggo sattanam visuddhiya. Soka pariddhavanam samatikkamaya. Whatever the sorrows we have, whatever the sufferings we have, whatever the sort of despair we have, all we start to slowly fade away. Don't expect this will happen within a day or within a week, within a month. But slowly you will understand some kind of a contentment is available in the mind. Irrespective of what happens outside, you understood kind of a refuge is available within yourself, not outside. More you practice, more you have confidence in your own practice, you will understand, okay, this is the path, this is the way, and I have less burden now, or I have less friction now, less frustration now. Instead, I have some kind of a serenity, some kind of a happiness. It is not kind of a pleasure, but kind of a serene, kind of a peace, stillness. So this kind of a happiness. So it is based on the wisdom. It is not that something that we are trying to immediately coming up with miracles, but rather we are observing what is really going on, understand with the wisdom, this is the nature of the situation, this is how things are. While these things are behaving like this, how the mind can behave in a very consistent manner? How the mind become undisturbed? So this is how Buddha is actually recommending his path.
Sorry, Bhante, we've actually gone over time. Is it okay if we continue?
Yeah.
So question number 5 of 7, theory question. Bhante, in the 7 enlightenment factors, you mentioned having energy helps to improve effort. Are there any particular things you can suggest for us to improve our energy? Much merits for your guidance. That's the end.
Now, this energy is actually more related to the various activities. So today, actually, I have mentioned only related to the Kayanupassana. But even, say, for example, Vedranupassana. Suppose there are various pains arising in the body. Now, you need some energy to endure it, to be patient with them. And even while with these various painful feelings are available, to continue your practice. So this is also energy. And suppose there are times your meditation is not going well, you feel like collapsed. At that time, you need energy to again rise up. This is also energy. And sometimes people are telling, okay, you are wasting your time. What's the point of looking at this breath? What's the point of looking at air? There is no use, and people are criticizing you, but still you continue your practice. So this is also energy. So likewise, and it's in a way we can say it is coupled with faith, because you have faith on the practice, you have faith on the Dhamma, you have faith on the Buddha. So you continue even when still you can't find say kind of tangible results. Still you are continuing. This is also contributing towards the energy. Therefore, it is not just Kayanupassana, just by watching the breath you are contributing, but by various other activities also we are contributing towards the energy. Whenever various obstacles are coming on our way, so we are not stopping. We don't get defeated. Rather, we continue the practice. And even when the results are not yet seen, still we continue. So this is how actually effort, the energy is arising.
Question number 6 of 7 is a general question. My mind, very randomly, regardless of morning or evening, gets into a bad mood, i.e. irritable, less appetite, less chatty, less motivated, and in need of instant gratification, irrespective of any external stimulus. Why does this happen? How can I manage my emotions so as not to harm myself, my image in the minds of co-workers, or feelings of those around me by acting angry for no good reason? That's the end.
So I think, if we are trying to pretend ourselves, it becomes a little burden to us. So we are always want to look good. Say, for others' eyes, I have to always appear beautiful. It's very difficult. Because we always want to correct others' view about ourselves. We always want to think, okay, he should have a kind of a pleasant view about me. He should never have a wrong view about me. He should never refuse me. He should always appreciate me. He should always praise me. This is a kind of a, in a way, not necessary. Because, we can't do it. If we are trying to do it, so then we are trying to live on others' eyes. So we can simply be ourselves, we can simply be open. So I have certain shortcomings, I still have certain strengths, and I am trying to develop my strengths and reduce shortcomings. So we as humans, that's the nature. So the Buddha's teaching is available for that. So we are recognizing what are the shortcomings within ourselves. Where can I develop? Where can I improve? Where do I go wrong? Where are these mood changes happen? What are the external causes for these mood changes to happen? So how can I maintain the proper mood in a way? How can I maintain a sort of an equanimous mind even when things are going wrong? Now, this does not mean kind of an indifference, kind of a sort of callous kind of a situation, but rather with wisdom, are we able to maintain the sort of unwavering kind of a situation? So this requires some strength within yourself. So that is what we are trying to develop, mindfulness to understand various realities. So this is how the whole practice is based on. Simply by taking it superficially and trying to achieve it, okay, I need to appear like this. I always have to appear like beautiful, smart, very wise and all these things. Impossible. I might do some foolish tasks. I might behave in a wrong way. I might lose my mindfulness. All these things are possible. And I might fall asleep while talking, while meditating, while among others. I might use wrong words. Everything can possible. So others also may forgive me. I also forgive them. Likewise, actually, the whole thing is communicating. So therefore, not necessary to think too much about, I always have to have the sort of the best mood or correct view or something like that. Rather, then and there I can recognize how my mind reacts, how these mood changes happen, how emotions are arising. And more you observe that, then mind become kind of matured. Is not trying to suppress these different moods, but we are recognizing these moods. We observe these moods, how these moods are arising, how the mind is trying to react, and how the mind is trying to condition. And then we understand it's not necessary. And when they are arising, you can watch it like an outsider. So this is in the way Chitta Anupassana. This is in the way Dhamma Anupassana. So this is how you are observing these various moods also come and going. They are not permanent. You can't have the same mood throughout the day. It's impossible. Moods change, happen. They are also impermanent. So likewise, you can develop your mindfulness, wisdom. Then that may give you a lot of strength to continue your practice and again to face various ups and downs in your life.
Question number 7. There's two parts. I'll do the first part. Sitting mindfulness. The breath is very subtle, making me intentionally breathe as I try to observe, which I think is wrong. How do I observe without this intentional breathing? That's the end.
Chatu, there is a heavy rain going on. I couldn't hear the question.
Okay, I'll say again. Sitting mindfulness. The breath is very subtle, making me intentionally breathe as I try to observe, which I think is wrong. How do I observe without this intentional breathing? That's the end.
I mean, you simply observe. You don't need to intentionally breathe. So let the body breathe. And that is what we need to do. I mean, you don't need to interfere. That's what I said. At the beginning, we may introduce noting, labeling, and all these techniques are there. Because mind is not focused. But later, the breath becomes calm, breath becomes subtle. So at that time, if we try to force breathe, that is wrong. If we try to intentionally breathe, that is wrong. Because we have to facilitate this calming down. That is what Buddha mentioned is number 4. Assambhayam kaya sankharam asasisamiti sikkati. By tranquilizing the breath, you allow the breathing to happen. So you allow it to happen. Rather than doing anything, you let it happen. So that is the way the correct practice. At the beginning, you contribute by seeing how it is long, whether it is short, and all these things. But as a result of this practice, your breath starts to calm down, starts to become subtler and subtler. At that time, you have to facilitate that. You don't need to do anything. Try to not to do anything, then it will happen naturally.
Last question, Bhante. Continuation from the previous one. Can the sitting practice and other mindful practices have adverse impacts on my life, like arousal of diagnosable mental illness or noticing too much detail sense objects, that the big picture or the meaning is incomprehensible? I hope that makes sense. That's the
Could you repeat the second part, Chatu?
I'll try. I'll read the whole thing. Can the sitting practice and other mindfulness practices have adverse impacts on my life, like arousal or diagnosable mental illness, or noticing too much detail sense objects, that the big picture or the meaning is incomprehensible? I don't know the exact meaning of that question.
Actually, basically, so if we do correct mindfulness practice, we may not get any mental illnesses. Instead, whatever the illnesses we have, we may slowly disappear, because it's a kind of a remedy. It's a kind of a medicine for the various mind-based illnesses. I think we call them this is just a beautiful term, psychological diseases or what, different names are there. So that kind of nowadays many bodily diseases, bodily illnesses are happening because of the mental unrest, because of the mental situation, because of the kind of agony, because of the frustration, because of various mental issues. But the mindfulness practice helps to understand different situations, have kind of an own understanding, have kind of an awareness, have kind of a restful mind, have kind of a relaxed mind, tension-free mind, stress-free mind. So that actually contributing to the health, the mental health becoming better and better, and that contributes to bodily health, so the body also become healthier and healthier. So therefore, it has a kind of a good relationship. So at the beginning, we may have various frustrations, various expectations, a lot of burdens and all these things. But slowly, with the practice of mindfulness, mind become comfortable, take things easy, you allow things to happen without interfering too much. And on top of that, you apply a lot of wisdom, and that also strengthen your attitude, and you become sort of mature. And this all helps to sort of endure even situation. As even for the previous question, our sort of patient endurance increase. Nowadays, we are lack of endurance, lack of patience. We need everything instantly. But when we have patience, when we have endurance, we can tackle some hardships. We can bear certain hardships. So this is how the situation happens. So other than that, we don't need to expect any miracles. I mean, meditation practice, mindfulness practice is not a path to achieve miracles, but to kind of understanding, kind of having kind of awareness, not only about yourself, but also about the others. So more you practice, you become aware about your situation, how this body works, how it gets sick, what are the proper food for this, what are the attitudes in my mind, what are the various traits in my mind, how this mind works. And you kind of coming up with various solutions in a way. You're coming up with kind of a self-understanding. And when you have such understanding, you can easily apply that to the others. And then when someone else is behaving in a particular way, you will understand, okay, he's in this kind of a situation. he has to be sort of sympathized, because I also went through such situation. Now he is now going through such situation. Your mother is going through such situation. Father is going through such situation. Your husband is going through such situation. Your wife is going through such situation, because you understood within yourself, okay, I also went through such situation. Now, unfortunately, this person is now going through such situation. Now you become sort of emotionally literate about this situation. Now this is called emotional literacy. You can understand someone else's emotions. And you, because you understood your own emotions, and then you can understand someone else's emotions as well. Then we become sort of sympathetic. Empathy is there. So therefore, it's a kind of a wide variety of benefits are there. But expecting miracles is the wrong attitude, wrong expectation. Rather, it's a kind of an understanding happens about our own way of life. So rather than finding miracles, rather than expecting any miracles, let's come back to the body, come back to the mind, observe the body. And accordingly, we will understand what is really going on. What is the correct picture?
Thank you, Bhante. That was the last question. We've gone well over time again, which is good and bad, I guess. So I'll wrap up very quickly. Once again, thank you, Bhante, for giving up your valuable time to run this program, and especially also to the participants for joining, and also to the organizing members for providing this program. We did have a good range of questions. Actually, we don't get these questions everywhere, so I listened to some other forums, and this type of question or these style of questions don't always come up. So it's really good to have a forum like this and have someone like Bhante who can explain it and give good answers for things that are happening in your mindfulness practice. So with that, I'd like to wrap up. Theruvan Sarnai, Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu.
Theruvan Sarnai, Sukhi Hotu. Theruvan Sarnai.